talking a little bit about the Charter just in general, about the rights it gave, and I think one of the things that's interesting to talk about is one of the clauses that is used not so much. Adam and I were talking about it just before Padre got here, I think, that one of the interesting things is that generally the rights are, sort of sections 2 through 15 are interpreted as broadly as possible and then just limited by section 1. But the other limit that was built into the Charter was, of course, the notwithstanding clause. Is it 33?
Yep. Yes.
Which was intended to be sort of the escape pressure valve to allow Parliament to make sure that it was able to control things if absolutely necessary. And it's been used preemptively in one case. I think it was Alberta to just notwithstanding
Saskatchewan
to send nurses back to work. Some sort of essential.
It was
service.
It was some workers.
And of course, it's perhaps best known for being used pretty regularly. I think in Quebec, but most notably for, of course, the language laws. But other than that, it's become sort of a dirty word in the rest of the country, and certainly it's a dirty word at the federal level, where it has, I don't think, ever been used substantively.
No.
So I guess the real question is it necessary if it's used so rarely, or is it just is it just constitutional dead wood?
I think that the provincial governments still maintain it's necessary. I'm not sure how popular they would be, but I really think that how you interpret the lack of use of the override clause, sort of like a lot of things about the Charter, is related to how cynical you are about politics in general, because there are people who say that this isn't really that Canadians are so attached to their entrenched rights that they don't want them touched, it's just that politicians really enjoy sloughing off responsibility onto the courts, you know? And I think certainly one good example of that was Paul Martin on same-sex marriage. Like, I don't think we ever heard him say that, you know, homosexuality is awesome and same-sex marriage is awesome. He just grounded his opinion entirely in the Charter and entirely in entrenched rights. And then when anybody suggested the override clause, he said, well, you know, why would you want to do that when we have the courts do these things? And so, I don't know, in some cases, I think certainly that there is a popular will against it. But in others, I'm not so sure whether it's just politicians who like to, you know, escape from issues like abortion or issues like same-sex marriage.
I think that a lot of it has to do with the first time, and you don't want to be the first guy to go back and limit rights. I think that Stephen Harper, as an example, has said that there are some things that he'd be willing to use the notwithstanding clause for, one of them being sort of restrictions on child pornography, which is, of course, you know, the easiest thing that you can ever use to justify limiting rights on. But other than that, like, I think there's few areas. And I think that too often we sort of look at is sort of these speech rights or these sexual rights, but it also covers a lot of the other stuff too. Like, I think language is excluded from the notwithstanding clause, but mobility rights and those other sorts of things are not. And so I think there's some areas where you might see people where there might be some sort of justification in the event of a national emergency. And there's also a question, too, I think, about whether it's meant to be permanent or whether it's just, like, meant to give government some time to figure something out, because there's a sunset clause on it that you have to keep repassing it every 5 years.
Well, like the Saskatchewan strike example, you know, as much as people might disagree with that, it is pretty much the perfect example of why you would want to have an override clause.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think is another interesting sort of issue that comes up is that you had is the Quebec used, I think Quebec was the first one to use the notwithstanding clause for a very clear sort of infringement of rights thing, is that most people agree that the sign law, I think it was Bill 101, I believe, was, sort of a clear infringement of rights, and yet then Quebec still used the notwithstanding clause. And so I think is that you've sort of seen an attempt by other groups to delegitimize sort of Quebec's use of that and to delegitimize Quebec's restriction of rights by, you know, never using the notwithstanding clause. And sort of, especially on a provincial level, if it just isn't used, and Quebec sort of being the only example that you have, is in that therefore their use becomes sort of less legitimate in that aspect.
And in the end, it comes down to, like, I think the Quebec example is an interesting one, because whether you agree with the sign laws or not, like, it's an effort to put a collective right, and that is to preserve the French language, over the individual right of people being able to put their signs up in English, or even Anglophones have an easier time reading signs. And, I mean, the Charter's pretty good about sort of reinforcing individual rights, but there isn't a whole lot in there about collective stuff. And that's really what I think there's obviously a certain amount of partisanship in the sign laws, but it's important to remember, too, that it wasn't just, it's been supported by every government since, not just the separatist ones. And so there's sort of, I think, a consensus among at least the political elites in Quebec that the notwithstanding clause, at least in that instance, has been useful and is sort of important to these sorts of things. And I think sort of, and that's one of the things that bothers me. We're seeing now discussions about, reintroducing the bringing Quebec into the Constitution, but they've been one of the governments that has used the Constitution the most to sort of balance the things they want to do against the rights that it protects.
Yeah, as I think, and that the idea, sort of the whole idea of bringing Quebec into the Constitution is that, and especially things like the Charter, right, are applicable all across, and regardless of sort of your national or group or provincial or whatever word you want to use, identity. And I think is that on collective rights, is that you only have sort of collective rights for Aboriginals, I think Section 26 or something like that.
28,
there we go. Is enshrined sort of the idea of collective rights for Aboriginals, but Aboriginals are the only group within Canada that receive those sort of idea of collective rights over individual rights, whereas you don't have that for things like the Quebecois or, you know, pick your group, right?
Yeah. I think, and just as we move away from this, I think one other thing that's come up in the last couple of days is, of course, musings by Mario Dumont about, and I just made, you know, snippy comments about bringing Quebec into the Constitution, but that, they'd be open to those sorts of things. And one of the areas that would seem to be discussed, and at least if you believe the sort of talking heads in the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star, is that there'd be willingness for people, for the federal government to sort of limit its own spending power or spending power abilities, which has historically been something that has been sort of protected by Supreme Court decisions that, you know, the federal government can spend its money as it sees fit because it's its money. I guess if I was a member of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, I would say it's the people's money, but I'm not, so it's the federal government's money. Importantly, when you sort of, in light of the sort of consensus that the boogie monster that is the fiscal imbalance exists, this would sort of correct it somehow. And I'm not sure how you can tell how you would write the amendment that says that the federal government can't spend money on everything that it wants, but certainly that seems to be something that's there. But what's interesting is that even with this, it'll open up, the can of worms that you need 7 of 10 provinces, but the new standard seems to be that you need 10 of 10 provinces.
Yeah, and I think is that the idea of limiting federal spending, when we talked about this sometime in the summer when Harper flowed this, dangerous is the word, but problematic in that, you know, the government, I think, needs to have that ability to spend its money as it sees fit for whatever comes up. I think that you give the government the money for that specific purpose, right? And to, like, limit that seems to be sort of blatant political pandering to Quebec to get them into the Constitution. And last time we did that, it didn't work out so well.
Actually, it worked out perfectly. It split the right, and we had a Liberal government for
okay, if you want to view that. And we almost split the country up. So if the Liberal government winning for 13 years at the cost of, you know...
It just didn't split the right. It split the right, like, in four different ways.
Bar, reform, and whatever was left.
Regional politics help Ontario.
Yeah. All regional politics might help progressives, too. We're coming up with just about 3 minutes before the hour, 4 minutes before the hour. We're just going to... why don't we just go out on a song, we'll play the BBC News, and we'll be back shortly. Or is that... we're good?
Yeah, that's,
okay.
That's a great idea, actually.
Giving me the thumbs up, so that means all is cool. So we'll be back just after the BBC News, and we'll have more to talk about in hour two of Tuesday Morning Special.